Hello and welcome back. My name is Rabbi Avi Heller, and together we're learning Masechet Megillah. We are about to start the last and final chapter of the tractate of Megillah. We're on the bottom two lines of Daf Chaf Hei Amud Bet. That's 25b, just at the very, very bottom. This series of recordings is a joint project of OU Torah, the OU Department of Synagogue Services, and the Daf Hashuvah Foundation. Okay, so one thing to note is that in the Mishnah, if you're learning Mishnah of Megillah, chapters 3 and 4 are reversed. So if you're learning the Mishnayot, you'll come to the chapter we're about to do first, and only then the third chapter, which we've already done. In the Gemara, it's in the way that we're doing it. The fourth chapter is B'nei Ha'ir, which we're about to start, and the third chapter is HaKori Ome, but in the Mishnayot, it's reversed. Now, we've been talking about Torah reading. And so since Torah reading is done in synagogue, we also have some discussion here about halachot of synagogues, and especially about the sanctity of synagogues, although the back half of this chapter will go back to Torah readings, all the special Torah readings for holidays and other special Torah readings. We're going to read the Mishnah. Bottom two lines of Daf Chaf Hamud Bet begins by saying, B'nei Ha'ir, the people who live in a city, shemachru rechovash al ir, who sell the town square, and this was in a large open courtyard that would have been right outside of the synagogue, lokhin bedamav, they may purchase with the proceeds of the sale, beit hakneset, a synagogue. Beit hakneset, if they sell a shul, a synagogue, lokhin teva, they may purchase with that. Let's assume for the moment that this is an ark, so they can purchase an Aron Kodesh that's inside of the synagogue. Teva, if they sell a ark, lokhin mitpachot, they may purchase Torah covers. Mitpachot literally means cloths. Nowadays we have a certain, we put like a clothing on the Torahs. They used to wrap them in certain kinds of cloths, so that those were called mitpachot. Mitpachot, if you sell those mitpachot, those cloths, and they could have been made of, valuable material like silk or whatnot. Yikchu svarim, you may purchase with the proceeds, and I'm now on the top of Chaf Vav Amud Aleph, 26a. You may purchase with the proceeds books. This probably means, as we've seen earlier in this tractate, this probably means separate individual scrolls, either of books of the Torah, or more likely, books of the prophets and writings, Nevi'im and Ketuvim, but separate scrolls of Nevi'im and Ketuvim. Sfarim, if you sell these individual scrolls of the prophets or the writings, Lokhin Torah, you may purchase with the proceeds a Torah scroll. Aval, however, im machru Torah, but if you sell a Torah, you may not use those proceeds, Loikhus Sfarim, to purchase volumes of the prophets or the writings. Svarim, if you sell prophets to the prophets or writings, lo yikhu mipachot, you may not buy Torah coverings with them. Mitpachot lo yikhu teva, and if you sell Torah coverings, you may not purchase an ark. Teva, if you sell an ark, lo yikhu beit kneset, you may not purchase a synagogue building. Beit hakneset, if you sell a synagogue building, lo yikhu et harchov, you may not purchase a town square. In other words, this is all about levels of sanctity. And the Mishnah begins by starting at the lowest level of sanctity. The town square has some minimal level of Kiddusha that applies to it. And that is a lower level of Kiddusha than the synagogue building itself. The synagogue building itself has a higher level than the town square, but a lower level of sanctity than the Aron Kodesh, than the Holy Ark that is inside of the synagogue. The Ark inside the synagogue has a lower level of holiness than the shrouds or the coverings that wrap the Torah, because they're closer to the Torah. And the wrappings of the Torah have a lower level of sanctity than individual scrolls, which actually have sacred writing in them. And those individual scrolls, even though they have sacred writing in them, are on a lower level of holiness than a Torah scroll itself, which of course is on the highest level. So you may use an object that has a lower level of holiness. If you sell it, you can use its money, which still has the sanctity of the object that inheres in it, in order to buy a higher level of holy object, but not a lower level of object. And the Mishnah adds one additional chidush here, which is v'chein b'motarehen, even if you have leftover proceeds. So if you sold the public town square and you made $1 million and you bought a synagogue building for $900,000, so you had $100,000 left over, you might think that that $100,000 now can be used for any, you know, purpose that you want to use it for, any communal purpose that you want to use it for. But that is not the case. It continues to have the sanctity of the original object that inheres in it, and you can only use that $100,000 for something that is on a higher holy level than the town square itself. There is a dispute among the Rishonim as to whether or not you are permitted to use the proceeds of a sale to buy something of equivalent value. Meaning, if you sell one Torah, can you use that money to purchase another Torah? Or does it have to be something that is on a higher level? But we'll leave that question unresolved for now. It's an interesting halachic question to pursue. Now, the source for all of this is a concept that we've talked about before. Rashi mentions it here on our Mishnah, which is a principle of ma'alin ba'kodesh. We always go up in holiness, v'lo moridin, and we don't go down in holiness. And these are actually two separate concepts. They're most famously applied related to Hanukkah candles, the hidur, the beautification of lighting Hanukkah candles, that we start with one candle the first night and add one candle each night until we have eight burning on the final night, is explained in the Gemara by saying Matlin Bakodesh, that we always go up in holiness. That's why we add candles like Beit Hillel instead of removing candles, which is the way Beit Shammai had suggested we do it, but we always go up in holiness. We've encountered it one or two, I think twice in this Masechta already, but its original source is in a different tractate. It's found in Daf Tzaditet Amud Aleph 99a in the tractate of Menachot. And it is originally mentioned in, it's brought up in a context of the Lechem HaPanim, what they call the showbread. When the showbread was baked, it was originally put on a silver table, and then afterwards, when it was brought out, after it had attained a higher level of sanctity, because it had been brought into the holy area, it was put on a gold table. So they explain that you go from a silver table in the beginning to a gold table because we always go up in holiness. And there it introduces the original teachings of going up in holiness and not going down in holiness, which Rashi quotes, but in a slightly problematic fashion. I'm not going to deal with the Rashi. I'm just going to quote the Gemara. The Gemara gives two examples. The first principle it gives is that we do not go down in holiness. And the example that it gives is once Moshe began to build the Mishkan, since Moshe was on the highest level of holiness of anyone in the community, once Moshe had begun putting up the Mishkan, he didn't allow anyone who had a lower level of holiness to put it up. We have a teaching that he himself continued to do the construction until it was complete, because we do not go down in holiness. So Moshe was at the highest level of holiness. We did not allow anyone else to participate. That was the teaching number one. Teaching number two is that we go up in holiness, and that was taught from the leftovers of the Korach rebellion. Korach and his followers had used some incense pans, metal incense pans, as part of their rebellion. And after the rebellion was quashed, they took those metal incense pans and they beat them into strips and used them as bands around the Mizbeach, around the altar. So those objects that had originally only been service objects used to bring incense into the temple were then now brought up to a higher level of holiness, and were actually used as part of the construction of the altar itself. So based on those two examples of taking the lower level holiness of the altar pans and bringing them up to a higher level, we see that we can take things from a lower level of holiness and apply them to a higher level of holiness. And based on the idea of Moshe doing all the construction of the Mishkan himself, we learn that once you reach the highest level of holiness, you never go down to a lower level of holiness. Okay, so that is the principle here related to sales. So the Gemara begins. We are now 2, 4, 5 lines down on Chaf Vav Amud Aleph 26a at the end of the line. B'nei ha'ir shemachru rechova shel ir. If the people of the city sell the town square, which is called here literally the street of the city, rechova shel ir, but it means this empty area right in front of the synagogue, like a courtyard. Okay, Amar Rabba Bar Barchana, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Bar Chana says in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, Zu divrei Rabbi Menachem bar Yossi stumta. This Mishnah, which doesn't have a name attached to it, so it's a Stam Mishnah, that's what stumta means, it's written anonymously, is actually the words of Rabbi Menachem bar Yossi. And as Rashi points out, we know this from the Tosefta. It's said explicitly in his name, and they're just identifying that he's the author of the Mishnah. And the reason they're identifying it is to show that he is a dat yachid, he is an individual opinion. And opposed to him, we have Aval Chachamim Omrim, we have an abbreviation there, Chet Chaf Aleph, that stands for Chachamim Omrim. The sages say, a whole bunch of sages oppose this position. Harachov Ein Bo Mishum Kedusha, the area outside the synagogue does not have holiness. And the reason this is important is that if it lacks holiness, then there will not be an issue for selling it. It is only once it has some level of holiness that it becomes subject to the calculation of only buying something with a higher level of holiness. Rabbi Menachem bar Yossi, my time, eh? What is the reason that Rabbi Menachem bar Yossi believes that the town square has a certain level of holiness? My time, eh? What is his reason? Ho'il, since the ha'am mitpalalin bo, the people daven there, bitaniot, in special prayer services, when they called fast days because there was no rain in Israel, so they had special prayer services to daven for rain. Uvema'amadot, and at certain times there were people who were supposed to do special prayers at certain times during the year. It was kind of like jury duty. There were the Kohanim did a rotation of who served in the Beit HaMikdash, and while the Kohanim from a certain town were doing their rotation in the Beit HaMikdash, some of the people from the town would do special prayer services. And according to the Gemara, these occasional prayer services would sometimes be done in the town square, either because so many people came to them that they would overflow the synagogue, or because on these special occasions they put up like a tent or something in the town square and used it as the synagogue instead of the main synagogue. So he believes that since there are occasional prayer services that are held there, it has a status of a quasi-synagogue. V'rabbanan, but the rabbis, hahu akrai ba'alma, they say, no, that's just a very temporary use of the space. Meaning, just because you have an occasional minyan there doesn't give it a sanctity. This could be potentially have a some relevance to people that make a marv minyan or an occasional service in a certain place, like at a banquet hall for a wedding. You know, if people daven there very occasionally, you could argue whether or not the place, if a place is used occasionally and regularly for prayer services, whether it might achieve a certain amount of sanctity. Now, there might be a difference in those cases anyway, because those are private minyans as opposed to official communal uses of the space. But there are examples of that as well. So it may be this may have some relevance to that halachic topic. Okay, that brings us to the two dots. We continue on with the next section of the Mishnah. We're 11 lines down from the top. Beit HaKnesset, if you sell a synagogue building, lokhin teva, then you can purchase with it a teva. Now, there is a dispute among the Rishonim as to what a teva is, and it'll be relevant a little later down in the Gemara. I translated it a moment ago as an ark, as you know, the Aron Kodesh, where you put the Torah in the front of the synagogue, and that is one possibility. The other possibility is that it's the bima. A flat table where you lay the Torah down to read it from. In both cases, in the case of the Ark, the Torah goes in it, and in the case of the Bima, the Torah goes on it. So that's why it's a little ambiguous, as we'll see as we go through the Gemara. Amar Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmeni, Amar Rabbi Yonatan. Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmeni said in the name of Rabbi Yonatan, and we're going to discuss Rabbi Yonatan's opinion. We're going to attack Rabbi Yonatan's opinion for quite a while, so pay close attention. Rabbi Yonatan wants to limit the rule of the Mishnah. Lo Shanu, they did not teach this Mishnah. In other words, that you can only use the money from an object of a certain level of holiness to purchase something with a higher level of holiness. Lo shano, they didn't make that teaching. Ela beit hakneset shel kfarim, except for related to rural synagogues in villages, small towns. Aval beit hakneset shel krachin, but in a synagogue of a larger city, Kevan de me alma atule, since many people come to it, the me alma means many people from around, from the world come to it, lo matsu mizabnile, they may not sell it, de havale de rabim, because it belongs to the public. Now, this is interesting. It's related to the topic of our tractate. As we saw related to Megillah readings, there's a distinction between outlying villages, kfar, and cities that have 10 batlanim, which we called krachim. Right, so we know there's a difference between them related to Megillah. Here we're finding another difference, which is that village synagogues where you only have a small number of people, so the bailim, the owners of the synagogue, are the people that live in that small village. But if you have a larger town, then we identify the synagogue as belonging to the public. Now, what exactly the distinction here is not clear. It's unclear if it means that not only people that live right near the synagogue participate in giving money to it, paying dues, but maybe even other people who don't live in that city who travel through for business or for other reasons give money to it. Or if we're just saying that at a certain size, there's no longer a small enough group of balabatim that you can make a simple decision about whether or not to sell it. That's a whole discussion of it, about exactly what authority is required in order to sell it. But Rabbi Yonatan is basically saying only a synagogue with a small number, only a small synagogue with a small number of owners that's clearly defined can sell the synagogue. Anything that's larger than that belongs to the public, and it may not be sold even in order to, it may not be sold at all. Forget about what you do with the proceeds. Amar Ravashi. Ravashi is going to challenge Rabbi Yonatan's teaching. Hai Beknishta de Matamachsia. There was a certain synagogue. A Beknishta means a house of prayer in Aramaic, so a synagogue. De Matamachsia, of a certain Babylonian town that was called Matamachsia, which was where Ravashi lived. Af Agav de Me Alma Atula, even though many people come into it. So once Ravashi became the head of Matamachsia, it became a much bigger town, so it was now considered to be a krach city. Kevan de adata didi ka'atu, since when they established the synagogue, they did it on my authority, that is Ravashi's authority, iba ina, if I want, that is if Ravashi says, if I want to, mizabninale, I can sell it. So Ravashi is first of all challenging it on a number of levels. First of all, he's saying that a synagogue and a krach can be sold. And second of all, he seems to be saying that he himself has the authority in order to sell it. It does not require this group of people, whoever they are, that we called B'nai Ha'ir, all the original owners. I suspect that B'nai Ha'ir mean landowners. You know, there's original group of landowners. You know, Mea Sha'arim, as an example, as in the neighborhood outside in Yerushalayim, was when it was originally established, there were 108 people who owned plots of land in that neighborhood. So they called them Mea Sha'arim because approximately there were 100 people that were the original owners. So they are, those original landowners are probably what we call the B'nai Ha'ir. And then there may be other people that don't own land who live in the area or live outside the area or travel through, but they're not members of, they're not B'nai Ha'ir. Okay. So Ravashi here says that he is able to sell it on his own authority. But the reason he gives is that he seems to be saying that it was established al tanai on for that reason, that in the very beginning it was established that he had the right to determine what happened with the synagogue. And so if he determines that it should be sold for the public good, it can be sold. Meitve, we have a question. Amar Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda said, Ma'aseh b'vet ha'kneset shel tursiyim. There was a story related to a certain synagogue of Tursiim. Rashi says that Tursiim were metal workers, copper makers. And I saw somewhere, maybe it was the Marsha, that metal workers were was a kind of a smelly job, like tanners. So nobody else wanted to have a shul with them, so they kind of went off and made their own society and their own shul where they could be together. And, you know, they sort of hung out together, and the politer society of people that smelled better didn't hang out at the copper workers' shul. So there was a certain copper worker, Shol Shahaya Bushalaim, it was in Jerusalem. Shemachruha le Rabbi Eliezer, and the metal workers decided to sell the synagogue to Rabbi Eliezer. Va'asaba called Tsarchav, and he did in it all of his personal needs, meaning he purchased it and then he used it as his own personal property. Ve'ha'hatam de krachim havu, but it was in Jerusalem, and Jerusalem is a krach, and how did he have the right to sell it? According to Rabbi Yonatan, you don't have the right to sell such a synagogue, because it belongs to the public. So the answer was, Hahu beknishta zute. It was a very, very small synagogue, Hava, it was. The inhu avduha, and they built it themselves. In other words, they were craftsmen themselves, and they didn't pay someone money to do it. They did it on with their own labor, and it was very small, and therefore they could be considered to be the owners, and they had the right to sell it, even though it was in a krach. So we have a number of different elements that are circling here to determine which is the most important thing. Is it the most important that it's a village versus a city? Is it the most important whether it's very small or larger? Is it very important how it was originally founded? Was it originally founded by a certain group of people that built it with their own hands? Or was it originally founded with a certain rabbinic authority who had the right to determine what it would be? Or is it determined by whether or not it is owned by the public, so to speak. So all of these questions and kashas are going back and forth relate to whether or not, what are the rules related to synagogues. Now it is, of course, actually an important halachic question, and we'll continue to discuss it in our next recording, because sometimes when Jewish communities, the demographics change and people have to move, or synagogues that used to be thriving now become derelict and have no money, they often have a question about selling the synagogue, under what conditions they can sell it, and what they can use the money for, the proceeds of the money for. It is a very, very practical and important question of contemporary relevance. We're going to stop there. We'll continue in our next recording. Have a wonderful day.